श्रीमद् भगवद गीता की जय निताय गौर प्रेमानंद ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबली फॉर दी ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबली ऑल ग्लोरीज ऑल ग्लोरीज टू श्री गुरु एंड गौर ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भगवद् गीता एज इट इज चैप्टर 15 द योगा ऑफ द सुप्रीम पर्सन टेक्स्ट नंबर 6 भासयते सूर्यः न शशांकः न पावकः यत् गत्वा न निवर्तन्ते तद्धाम परमं मम न तद्भासयते सूर्यो न शशांको न पावकः यद्गत्वा न निवर्तन्ते तद्धाम परमं मम न तद्भासयते सूर्यो न शशांको न पावकः यद्गत्वा न निवर्तन्ते तद्धाम परमं मम न तद्भासयते सूर्यो न शशांको न पावकः यद्गत्वा न निवर्तन्ते तद्धाम परमं मम
यद्गत्वा न निवर्तन्ते
dhamma paramam mama. Okay, can everybody please move forward so that those who come later can have place to sit inside and come like this. There is space here, you can come on this side. Na, not, tat, that, bhasayate,
illuminates,
suryaha,
the sun,
na,
nor,
shashankaha, the moon, na,
nor,
pavakaha,
fire,
electricity,
yat,
where,
gatva,
going,
na,
never,
nivartante,
they come back,
tat dhamma,
that abode,
paramam,
supreme,
mama,
my. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. That supreme abode of mine is not illumined by the sun or moon, nor by fire or electricity. And those who reach it never return to this material world. Purport. The spiritual world, the abode of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, which is known as Krishna Lok, Goloka Vrindavan, is described here. In the spiritual sky, there is no need of sunshine, moonshine, fire or electricity, because all the planets are self-luminous. We have only one planet in this universe, the sun, which is self-luminous. But all the planets in the spiritual sky are self-luminous. The shining effulgence of all those planets, called Vaikunthas, constitutes the shining sky known as the Brahma Jyoti. Actually, the effulgence is emanating from the planet of Krishna, Goloka Vrindavan. Part of that shining effulgence is covered by the Mahat Tattva, the material world. Other than this, the major portion of that shining sky is full of spiritual planets, which are called Vaikunthas, chief of which is Goloka Vrindavan. As long as a living entity is in this dark material world, he is in conditional life. But as soon as he reaches the spiritual sky, by cutting through the false, perverted tree of this material world, he becomes liberated. Then there is no chance of his coming back here. In his conditional life, the living entity considers himself to be the lord of this material world. But in his liberated state, he enters into the spiritual kingdom and becomes an associate of the Supreme Lord. There he enjoys eternal bliss, eternal life, and full knowledge. One should be captivated by this information. He should desire to transfer himself to that eternal world and extricate himself from this false reflection of reality. For one who is too much attracted to this material world, it is very difficult to cut that attachment. But if he takes to Krishna consciousness, there is a chance of gradually becoming detached. One has to associate himself with devotees, those who are in Krishna consciousness. One should search out a society dedicated to Krishna consciousness and learn how to discharge devotional service. In this way, he can cut off his attachment to the material world. One cannot become detached from the attraction of the material world simply by dressing himself in saffron cloth. He must become attached to the devotional service of the Lord. Therefore, one should take it very seriously that devotional service, as described in the 12th chapter, is the only way to get out of this false representation of the real tree. In chapter 14, the contamination of all kinds of processes by material nature is described. Only devotional service is described as purely transcendental. The words Paramam Mama are very important here. Actually, every nook and corner is the property of the Supreme Lord, but the spiritual world is Paramam, full of six opulences. The Katha Upanishad 2.2.15 also confirms that in the spiritual world there is no need of sunshine, moonshine or stars. Na tatra suryo bhati na chandra tarakam. For the whole spiritual sky is illuminated by the internal potency of the Supreme Lord. That supreme abode can be achieved only by surrender and by no other means. Please repeat the translation. That supreme abode of mine,
that supreme abode of mine
is not illumined,
by the sun or moon,
nor by fire,
nor
electricity.
Those who reach it
never return
to this material
world. ओम अज्ञान तिमिरांधस्य ज्ञानांजन शलाकय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्री गुरवे नमः. శ్రీ చైతన్య మనోభీష్టం స్థాపితం యేన భూతలే స్వయం రూప కదా మహ్యం దదాతి స్వపదాంతికం. వందేహం శ్రీగురు శ్రీయుత పదకమలం శ్రీగురున్ వైష్ణవాంశ్చ శ్రీరూపం సాగ్రజాతం సహగణ రఘునాథాన్వితం తం సజీవం సాద్వైతం సావధూతం పరిజన సహితం కృష్ణ చైతన్యదేవం శ్రీ రాధాకృష్ణ పాదాన్ సహగణలలిత శ్రీ విశాఖాన్వితాంశ్చ. నమో విష్ణుపాదాయ కృష్ణ ప్రేష్ఠాయ భూతలే శ్రీమతే భక్తి వేదాంత స్వామీనితి నామినే. నమస్తే సారస్వతి దేవే గౌరవాణీ ప్రచారిణే నిర్విశేష శూన్యవాదీ పాశ్చాత్య దేశతారిణే. ముఖం కరోతి వాచాలం పంగుం లంఘయతే గిరిం యత్కృపాతమహం వందే శ్రీగురుం దీనతారిణం. వాంఛాకల్పతరుభ్యశ్చ కృపాసింధుభ్య ఏవ చ పతితానాం పావనేభ్యో వైష్ణవేభ్యో నమో నమః. నమో మహాపదాన్యాయ కృష్ణ ప్రేమ ప్రదాయతే కృష్ణాయ కృష్ణ చైతన్య నామనే గౌరద్విషే నమః. హే కృష్ణ కరుణా సింధో దీనబంధో జగత్పతే గోపేశ గోపికా కాంత రాధాకాంత నమోస్తుతే. తప్త కాంచన గౌరాంగీ రాధే బృందావనేశ్వరీ వృషభానుసుతే దేవీ ప్రణమామి హరిప్రియే. జయ శ్రీకృష్ణ చైతన్య ప్రభు నిత్యానంద శ్రీ అద్వైత గదాధర శ్రీవాసాది గౌర భక్తవృంద. హరే కృష్ణ 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 హరే హరే, హరే రామ 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 హరే హరే. హరే కృష్ణ. In the 14th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna has talked about the three modes of material nature and has discussed how the living entities in this material world are all bound and controlled by these three modes. At the end of the 14th chapter, Krishna talks about how the conditioned living entity may become liberated from this bondage by the process of devotional service or bhakti. Mam cha yogya vicharena bhakti yogena sevate sa guna insamati tyaitan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. So by taking to the process of devotional service, one becomes situated on the spiritual platform, the platform of Brahma. And in this way one can transcend the three modes of material nature which are the real cause of bondage. Real bondage is the bondage of the three modes. The real freedom is freedom from the three modes. Real freedom is not political freedom or social freedom or whatever other kinds of freedom we may think of. But real freedom is freedom from the clutches of the three modes of material nature. But in order to become free or detached from this material world, one must also become attached to something else, which is superior, and that is Krishna consciousness. So therefore, Krishna has, at the end of the 14th chapter, advised that we should be very faithful in the rendering of devotional service. That's the purport of the word avyabhicharena. Vyabhichari means to be unfaithful, and avyabhicharena means that very sincerely and faithfully we should prosecute Krishna consciousness, and then we can easily become free. In the 15th chapter, Lord Krishna has further described the nature of this material world by comparing it to an ashwatha tree, a banyan tree, which is very, very extensively spread out, which has roots and branches everywhere for miles and miles. And it is very difficult to figure out what is the beginning and what is the end and where things stand in this world. So therefore, the living entity in any of the planetary systems in this world is forever disturbed, is forever in the clutches of the confusion of this ashwatha tree. So Krishna advises asanga shastrena dridhena chitva, because ashvattham enam suvirudha moolam, the roots of this ashwatha tree are very, very strong and it's very hard to cut it. But Krishna says it is possible to cut asanga shastrena dridhena chitva. We should cut this attachment by asanga shastrena, by the weapon of detachment. So when that detachment comes by performing activities that increase our attachment to Krishna or to the spiritual sphere, then we become released from this bondage. And then where do we go? So in the previous verse, in the fifth verse, today we are on the sixth verse. So in the fifth verse, Lord Krishna has just come to that point again where he says, Gacchanti amurha padam avyayam tat. When he says how one can attain to that eternal kingdom. So what is that eternal kingdom? And that is described in this verse. That supreme abode of mine is not illumined by the sun or the moon, nor by fire or electricity. Those who reach it never return to this material world. So this spiritual world, the eternal world, has been referred to several times by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita on at least four or five different occasions directly, and at other places also he has given some hints about this. Information about the spiritual world is given in very brief in the Bhagavad Gita. More detailed information is available in other scriptures like the Brahma Samhita. In the 8th chapter, Lord Krishna describes the nature of this material world and how a person should endeavor to leave his body in a certain frame of mind. He talks about how the entire material world is full of misery. A Brahma Bhuvana Loka Punaravartino Arjuna Mam Upetyatu Kaunteya Punarjanmana Vidyate. He says that from Brahma Loka to Patal Loka, all the planets are planets of misery, wherein repeated birth and death take place. But a person who attains me, mam upetya, punarjanma na vidyate. So he doesn't have to take birth again. So therefore one attains that highest abode. Mam upetya punarjanma dukkhalayam ashashvatam natnuvanti mahatmanah samsiddhim paramam gata. And in the verse just previous to that, he talks of a similar point, that this material world is dukkhalayam ashashvatam. It is the abode of misery. It is also temporary. And one who attains me, mam upetya, then he can attain to that highest destination, paramam gatim, the supreme destination that can be attained. Then again, later on in the same chapter, in the 8th chapter itself, Lord Krishna talks about the higher nature. Having described the material world, then Krishna says, parastasmatu bhavunyo vyakto vyakta sanatana yasa sarveshu bhuteshu nashyatsu na vinashyati. He says that beyond this material nature, which has two phases, manifest and unmanifest, there is another unmanifest nature which is superior and which is eternal. And that unmanifest spiritual nature is not destroyed when this nature is destroyed. And the Acharyas explained that manifest and unmanifest material world refers to the night of Brahma and the day of Brahma. So within the universe there is creation and life flourishes in all its variegatedness, in all the planets and all the species of life in the daytime of Brahma. And when Brahma sleeps in his night, then everything else sleeps also. So it's like the night of the universe. So sometimes there is life manifested and sometimes life is not manifested in this material world. But beyond this manifest and unmanifest material life, in this material world, there is something else that is superior, that is beyond this material creation, that is also unmanifest, but it is unmanifest in the sense that it cannot be seen by the material eyes. It exists eternally, but it cannot be seen by these eyes. Avyaktoksharityuktastamahu paramamgatim yam praptyana nivartante taddhama paramam mama. Again the same point. That avyakta world, that spiritual transcendental world, is eternal, unmanifest, wonderful, and once one attains that abode, one doesn't come back to this material world. So that abode is reality. This abode is not reality, it is a dream. It is a false representation of reality, as Prabhupada mentions in the purport. But does it mean then that this material world doesn't exist? Because we say the material world is false, does it mean it doesn't exist? No, it exists. But it is temporary. What is the meaning of false and true? This is also explained by Lord Krishna in the very beginning of the Bhagavad Gita in the second chapter, when he says, na sato vidyate bhavo, na bhavo vidyate satah, ubhayo drishtvantas tvanayo tattva darshabhihi. So Krishna says that of that which is existing, na asatah, that means that which is not true, vidyate bhavaha, there is no endurance, na bhavaha, there is no endurance, that means that which is asat, that which is false, does not exist for a long time. Na abhavaha, on the other hand, the changing quality does not exist for that which is sat. In other words, what is real and what is false is defined in this verse. And Krishna says, what is truth? Truth is that which is eternal, which endures, which doesn't change. Whereas falsehood is that which changes. So that is the definition of false and true. So it doesn't mean that the material world doesn't exist. It exists, but it is always changing. It is sometimes manifest, it is sometimes not manifest. But the spiritual world is always manifest to those who have the eyes to see, to those whose eyes are, hearts are full of devotion for the Lord, and it forever ceases, it doesn't exist, it forever is unmanifest for those who are materially absorbed. In this way, Krishna has explained that higher realm, which is reality, which we must try to attain to. And he says in the purport here, one paragraph, yeah, the third paragraph, he says, one should be captivated by this information. That's an interesting line, that one should be enchanted, one should be captivated by the descriptions of the spiritual world. Rather, people in this world, instead of being captivated by the spiritual nature, are captivated by the razzle-dazzle that we see around us, which are nothing but displays of the illusory energy of Krishna. And because everybody is enchanted with the names, forms, etc. of this world, everybody gets entrapped and has to repeatedly undergo birth and death. So in the spiritual world, because everything is eternal, everything is spiritual and conscious, automatically everything is self-luminous. And that is why in this verse it says that there is no need for any sun or moon or fire or electricity to light up anything, to illuminate anything. In this material world, which is called Brahmanda, inside the egg, so-called egg of the universe, there is darkness. And to dispel that darkness, you need the sun. So therefore the Lord has created the sun. And sunlight illuminates the universe. However, we also experience night when we are in the opposite direction. And then at night we need the moon, or we need fire, or we need electricity and so on to light up our environment. But in the spiritual world, everything is self-luminous. Therefore there is no need for any of these other artificial or even so-called natural illuminating agents. As Prabhupada says here, quoting from the Kathopanishad, na tatra suryo bhati na chandra tarakam. Actually this is quoted by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur when he explains that basically it is Krishna's light that lights up everything. In the spiritual world there is no need for all these other artificial lighting arrangements because Krishna lights up everything. In fact, all light that is existing even in the material world is a reflection of Krishna's light. Krishna is the origin of all light. And that effulgence is called the Brahma Jyoti. And in this Brahma Jyoti, all these spiritual planets exist. So by nature, Krishna is himself full of divine effulgence. In Vrindavan, when Krishna was enacting his childhood pastimes, he would go into the houses of the Brajabasis and steal butter and do other forms of mischief. And the gopis would get very agitated, and sometimes they would go and complain to Mother Yashoda about Krishna, and then they would say that this boy is so clever that even when it is dark he comes in, and we don't keep any lamps so that he should not see his way, but nevertheless he finds what he wants. So Madhava Yashoda asked, how does he find? So the gopi said, well, I think it's because of the jewels that he is wearing. You have put so many jewels and all these jewels are shining, so they create some light. So then Mother Yashoda said, all right, I'll take away all these jewels so that he doesn't steal anymore, he won't be able to see. So then the gopi said, no, actually don't take out. The point is that I think his body is like that. Wherever it goes, he lights up his place. So he doesn't need jewels or he doesn't need anything. So in more fundamental ways than probably what the gopis imagine, that's the truth. Yet Krishna is self-luminous. That Krishna lights up everything. And all light is actually simply a reflection of the original light coming from Krishna, including the Brahma Jyoti. Just a few verses ago, in the end of the 14th chapter, Krishna has explained Brahmano hi pratishtham, that I am the basis of the impersonal Brahman. So in this way, Krishna's abode, the spiritual world, is reserved for those whose hearts are full of devotion for him and who are in a mood of service. And this is the gift that Krishna gives for one who has detached from this world and become attached completely to his lotus feet. They get a chance to go there and enjoy his intimate association. Because everything there is eternal, self-luminous, conscious, it is also endless, limitless. There is no end to it. Srila Prabhupada used to tell a little story about Dinabandhu to illustrate the nature, the eternal nature of the spiritual world, about how everything is eternal and limitless in the spiritual world. One time, in the old days, there was a young boy who was at the Gurukul, and he only had a mother and no father, and the mother was very poor. So long as he was at the Gurukul, it didn't matter. But then when the studies were over, the Guru asked for dakshina, some donation, and all the boys went home. Many of the boys belonged to wealthy families, so they were able to get very generous donations, dakshina, to give to the Guru. But this boy didn't have anything because his mother was very, very poor. So what should he do? The mother said, I'm sorry, I don't have anything to give. So then, very disappointed, the boy was heading back to the Gurukul from his house for the ceremony, the day of the ceremony, when the Guru Dakshina would be offered to the Guru. And in the forest, he began to call for Krishna, because his mother had told him that I cannot give you, but Krishna, Dinabandhu, can fulfill, because he is a friend of the fallen, a friend of the needy. So we are needy, so this Dinabandhu will help you. So where do I find this Dinabandhu? Well, he is there in the forest. The sages go there in the forest to obtain him. So, being a young, innocent mind, he immediately developed faith. And he went into the forest and began to call out Dinabandhu's name. And if it was a grown-up, perhaps, there would have been so many questions. How do we know? This is not possible. But because he was innocent and young, he immediately developed faith, and with great faith he started calling out Krishna's name as Dinabandhu. And within a short time, after sincerely calling again and again, Krishna came out from behind the bushes and said, you were calling me? He said, yes. You are Dinabandhu? He said, yes, my name is Dinabandhu. Incidentally, he is everybody's Bandhu, because everybody without Krishna consciousness is Dina or needy. One who is Krishna conscious is not needy. But one who is not Krishna, is rather full of devotion, doesn't need anything in life. He is actually the wealthiest person. And if there is a multi-billionaire but he doesn't have Krishna, then actually he is needy, he is very poor. So Krishna is everybody's friend, but in particular he is the friend of the needy, meaning that he is particularly merciful to those who surrender to him in a helpless mood. So Dinabandhu came out and this boy asked him, so you are Dinabandhu? He said, yes. So he said, you become my friend? He said, yes. So they became friends and they would play. Actually, this story has many variations, and those people who are brought up in India, you may have read different variations of this in your school. In one variation, he was Mohan, and Prabhupada told it as Dinabandhu. So in any case, then this boy narrated his woes, He said, you know, I want to offer some dakshina to my guru, but I don't have anything. So my mother directed me to you. He said, no problem. So here it is. Take this pot of yogurt and give it. Again, because he was so innocent and faithful, he immediately took the pot of yogurt happily and went. Maybe somebody with a material mindset would have thought, what? What is this pot of yogurt? Just, is that any gift? So in any case, he took it very happily and went and gave it to his guru. The guru had received all kinds of opulent gifts from different students. And when this boy came and the guru asked him, so what dakshina have you brought? He gave him this little pot of yogurt, this one small pot of yogurt. So the guru became a little disturbed. So what is this? What kind of dakshina is this? So he held it in his hand, but because he was a little disturbed, it fell from his hand. When the pot fell from his hand, some of the yogurt fell out from the pot. But when he lifted it, he saw that the pot was full. Again it fell. Again some yogurt fell out. But when he lifted the pot, it was again full. And in this way, the guru began to think deeply. This is not an ordinary pot. This is not ordinary yogurt. And the boy who has brought this, therefore, is not an ordinary boy. He called him, come here, tell me, where did you get this? Who gave you this? Then he described, Dinabandhu gave me. Who is this Dinabandhu? And then the teacher became blissful to understand the glories of his student, that he had personally received audience of Krishna. So Prabhupada narrated this story to illustrate how in the spiritual world everything is endless, how everything is unlimited, there is no shortage of anything. That's why when the guru saw that pot of yogurt which was completely full in all circumstances, he understood that this was something transcendental and not an ordinary pot of yogurt. Om Purnamadaha Purnam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Avashishyate. So the Upanishad says that on the spiritual platform, the Supreme Absolute Truth is a complete whole, and all emanations from Him are complete, and what remains behind is also complete and perfect. So therefore we see, according to this principle in the spiritual world, the pot of yogurt was complete and perfect. Although some yogurt fell out, still what remained was complete and perfect. So the guru could understand that this was something that belonged to the spiritual world. So this is the description there. Brahmaji is giving in the Brahma Samhita, Chintamani Prakarasadmashu Kalpa Vriksha Lakshavriteshu Surabhira Vipalayantam Lakshmi Sahasrishata Sambrahma Sevyamanam Govindamadi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. So Brahmaji explains that the spiritual world is a land of touchstone. Touchstone is a stone where you touch it and you can get all your desires fulfilled. You touch it to whatever you like. You can get anything you like. Chintamani Prakara Sadmashu Kalpa Vriksha. There are so many, all the trees there are desire trees, wish fulfilling trees. You can also fulfill all your desires by asking these trees. Everything in the spiritual world is actually conscious. And in that connection, one time somebody was asking Prabhupada about the dust of Vrindavan. And he asked Prabhupada that how is it that we say that the dust of Vrindavan is personal? How do we understand that? Dust is dust. It may be Chinmay, it may be Chintamani, but how do we understand that it is personal? So Prabhupada explained that, see, even in the material realm, things have personality. He gave the example of Hanuman when he was flying across the sea to reach Lanka. The personified Lanka, who was a Rakshasi, she came up and she accosted him. And then Hanuman had to keep her out of the way and then proceed on. So he said, if even in the mundane realm we have personification, then why not for spiritual things? The Vrindavan that is manifest here is non-different from the Vrindavan in the spiritual world. the two are completely identical. He says the proof that the dust of Vrindavan is personal and conscious is as follows. Prabhupada said, you take any ordinary dust and you ask that this dust should fulfill some desires. Will it happen? No. But you take the dust of Vrindavan and whatever you desire will be fulfilled. Because the dust has that power, has that potency. Because the dust is conscious, it's transcendental, it's personal. So like that, the trees in Vrindavan, in the spiritual world, are also conscious. They can fulfill all our desires. Lakshmi Sahasrashata Sambhrama Sevyamanam. Krishna is served there by thousands of gopis. Surabhir Abhipalayantam. He also tends Surabhi cows who give unlimited quantities of milk. Here in our Goshala, devotees are always struggling. And devotees get unhappy. We are not getting our milk today. What to do? If you want more milk, you have to breed more cows. And when you breed more cows, you need more space to keep all the cows and calves. We need more money to look after them and feed them and everything. And then at the end of it, the cows are giving just limited milk, just a few liters every day. But that problem doesn't exist in the other Vrindavan, the real, the Parabhyoma Vrindavan. This is also real, but in that Vrindavan, it doesn't exist. The Surabhi cows give as much milk as is required. One time Krishna asked Mother Yashoda, when Mother Yashoda was talking about Kshirodakshai Vishnu who lies in an ocean of milk, and then Krishna asked, he was only a small child, so he asked, Mother, there's an ocean of milk? He said, yes. Then how many cows are there that give so much milk? So that is a logical question. There is milk, there must be cows. So then Mother Yashoda explained, therefore the Supreme Lord, who has made the cow, he doesn't need the cow to get milk. We need the cow to get milk. But the Supreme Lord is all-powerful, so if he wants to have an ocean of milk, he can have as many oceans as he likes. Then Krishna was satisfied. So in the spiritual world, this is what is actually happening. It is an endless, eternal abode of bliss where pastimes take place. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the teachings to Sanatana Goswami, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explains that beyond the material world exists the Vaikuntha world. There are unlimited Vaikuntha planets, as Srila Prabhupada also mentions here in the purport. And each of these Vaikuntha planets is unlimitedly expanded. 8 miles by 100 miles, by 1,000 miles, by 10,000 miles, by 100,000 miles, by 1,000,000 miles, by 10,000,000 miles. So Mahaprabhu explains that each Vaikuntha planet is unlimitedly expanded and there are unlimited Vaikuntha planets. And all of them have a presiding deity who is an expansion of the original Supreme Lord Sri Govinda or Krishna of Goloka Vrindavan. And each of these planets is self-luminous, is conscious. And they are shining, and their effulgence actually then appears as the Brahma Jyoti, that spiritual effulgence. And in a small corner of the spiritual sky is the material world. And in that small corner, which is the entire material world, there are millions and billions of material universes in that one small corner. And one of those universes, which is a medium universe, is our universe, where there are unlimited planets. Among those unlimited planets, there is one small planet, the Earth. In this one planet, there are so many towns and cities, And here we are in Vrindavan, one town, where there are so many people. So we can imagine the extent of Krishna's creation, both material and spiritual. And Mahaprabhu says that each of these Vaikuntha planets is full of bliss. And the chief among the Vaikuntha planets is Krishna Loka. Elsewhere, Mahaprabhu explains that Krishna Loka, the chief planet, or the capital planet, so to speak, of the Vaikuntha world, has three divisions. One division is Gokul, the second is Mathura, and the third is Dwarka. So Krishna Loka in the spiritual world has three divisions. And this Gokul is also known as sometimes Goloka, sometimes as Vrindavan, sometimes as Shweta Dvipa or Goloka Vrindavan, and so on. In this way, in this original Gokul resides the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. Goloka Namni Nija Dhamni Tale Chatasya Devi Mahesha Haridhamasu Teshu Teshu Te Te Prabhava Nichya Vihitascheyena Govindamadi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. So there are different grades of existence in this material and spiritual world, right from Devi Dham, which is a material world, which is controlled by Devi or Durga. Then there is Mahesha Loka, the abode of Lord Shiva. Then there is Haridham, which is all the Vaikuntha planets, abodes of Lord Hari in his different expansions. And then ultimately there is Goloka, which is the original abode of the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. And so these are the different abodes of the spiritual world. And this spiritual world is now being described in this verse. And Srila Prabhupada is urging us to be captivated and enchanted by this information and make this the object of our life. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare,
Hare Ram,
Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Ram Hare. Are there any questions? Yes. Okay, if there's any question connected to the class, let's take that first and then we'll come back if there's time. Okay? Yes. The question is that sometimes people ask, how can we explain the spiritual world in relation to material ideas like so many miles and so on. Therefore, Mahaprabhu says it is unlimited. You try to explain, because people in the material world have no other way to understand. So you have to give them some indication. But actually he says they are unlimitedly expanded. But this concept is hard for us to absorb. How can something be one planet be unlimitedly expanded? So the point is that it is very, very large. That's the point. Yes.
Return back. And somewhere in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that one who is envious of Krishna cannot reach the abode of Krishna. After going to spiritual abode, one becomes envious of Krishna, then he will not again.
The question is that it is said here in this verse that one who has reached the abode of Krishna, one will come back, one will not come back. But it is also said elsewhere that if one is envious of Krishna, one cannot go to that spiritual abode. So having gone to that abode, if one becomes envious of Krishna, will one come back? Will. The question is that having gone there, one will not become envious. Because one cannot go there unless one has become completely freed from envy. And until one has developed complete a pure devotion to the Supreme Lord. So Krishna is promising that protection, that once somebody reaches his abode, he will not come back. In some of the verses I quoted from the 8th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, he says that two times, and then again in the 15th chapter, the same thing. Any other questions? Yes.
Should we scrutinize before understanding the philosophy in Krishna consciousness?
The question is, the boy in the story was innocent and simple, and he accepted whatever his mother told him. So to what degree should we be like that? Yes? We should have some basic sense of discrimination to understand what is reality and what is not. We should accept knowledge coming from the bona fide disciplic succession. And then we should accept innocently and with faith what the great acharyas have said. It's not that one should just blindly accept whatever everybody says. One should accept knowledge that comes down in the succession of bona fide devotees, and then accept the words of the scriptures and of the great acharyas in that spirit. Any other question? Yes. The cows in Goloka are in the form of cows. Are they souls or are they cows? They are both. You see, here the point is that in the material world there is a difference between the body and the soul. You have a material body which is being occupied by a spiritual soul. And then when the body is destroyed, then the soul leaves that body and takes up another body. But in the spiritual world it's not like that. There is no difference between the body and the soul. The body itself is spiritual. So there is no separate soul in the body. The entire body is made up of spiritual substance. It is all spiritual. Whereas for us, the body that we have now is material, and then the soul is spiritual. So there, the cows are fully spiritual. The trees, the grass, the water, the stones, the air, the peacocks, the gopas, gopis, everything, everyone is fully spiritual. There is no difference.
How about Prabhupada? He will be like that.
You mean your question is that will Prabhupada be in the spiritual world the way we saw him here? That was the form that he appeared in here in front of us. But there he will have whatever form that he wishes to relate to Krishna. Yes, Mata, you want question? Yes, your question now?
Because in further words, Lord says that my appearance and disappearance should be seen accordingly with connection to the devotee's appearance and disappearance. It should be noticed. So, how do I understand this?
Okay, the question is about Narad Muni, that he had a spiritual body, and it is also described that at the end of the day of Brahma or the life of Brahma, along with Brahma, Narad Muni also entered into Lord Mahavishnu. So how does one understand this? The point is that after Narad Muni got his spiritual body, he was sent here into this world for doing his preaching activities. So the creation and destruction of the universe doesn't make a difference to him, because he is spiritual. So therefore he remains wherever the Lord wants him to remain. And because he was here in this world, when the time comes for the universe to be destroyed and there is no facility for him to preach in this particular world, then he may be with the Lord till the Lord wants him to be elsewhere. And therefore, because he is here in this world, so he has to follow the procedure. So he moves into Vishnu and then on to his future services, maybe in the next day of Brahma, the next life, new Brahma, wherever he is required to serve, Narad Muni serves. His body, his transcendental body, is not affected by the creation and destruction of the universes. Whereas for others, they get new bodies time to time, the old ones are destroyed, but for Narad Muni that doesn't happen, because his body is entirely spiritual. The question is that at the time of the annihilation, then all the jivas, even if they are not devotees, they reside in Vishnu till the time of the next creation. And the same happens to Narad Muni as well, right? That's the question. So how are the two getting the same destinations? These are not actually destinations, they are just stopgap arrangements. They are stopgap arrangements where the future service awaits both the conditioned souls as well as the pure souls like Narad Muni. That's the first point. Each of them has some service to do in the next creation. Secondly, it's not necessary that Narad Muni will have to remain there for the entire night. Narad Muni may go to some other universe. He may be taken by the Lord anywhere where there is service required. Space and time are no constraints for the movement of Narad Muni. So wherever the Lord requires him to move and preach, he does that without any restrictions. Okay, so we'll stop here then. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Hare Krishna.